Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Freedom Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay Sutherland, and joining me today is Jason Fishman, who's the founder of Digital Niche Agency. I wrote too many notes down, Jason. Lost track of myself there. Also known as DNA. So that's a fun little acronym, Digital Niche Agency. Anyway, the goal for you folks listening today, I want you to understand, we're going to talk about the power of honing in on your vertical. And Jason has an interesting backstory that's going to help you understand really how to take your business to the next level. So welcome to the show, Jason.
Thanks, Lindsay. Pleasure to be here.
My pleasure to have you here. So please kick it off. Tell us a little bit about how did you get into this online space to begin with?
Sure. I'll take it all the way back. I actually got involved in marketing as an action sports consultant, grew up here in Southern California, skateboarding, snowboarding, and began working on campaigns in that genre. Only so many to work on, ended up turning into a Gen Y specialist. That's what millennials were called back then. Was deep in the agency world here in Los Angeles, got involved with the startup space. And that's what brought me into the world of ad tech. Advertising, was running the product marketing division, eventually overseeing sales for a mobile ad network. And that was exciting to me because before I would see these amazing products, companies, ideas, but with very little awareness, lack of eyeballs. And with advertising, that went away. So, okay, let's open up the floodgates. We were working with many Fortune 500s. I still was connected to the startup space here in Los Angeles and really wanted to be involved with growth stage companies. So started an agency, growth marketing firm. And at that time, we were taking on everybody. So apparel brands, automotive, you know, tier two dealerships, retail stores, you name it, it was coming across our desk. And eventually got introduced to these fundraising campaigns, investor acquisition, first through Regulation D, which meant we could target high net worth individuals we could solicit with advertising and outreach. With my background in advertising, I said, hey, I could stack data to reach high net worth, high household income audiences and reach the exact people that are applicable to these campaigns. We saw success off that, Lindsay. Was starting to get introduced to more issuers, companies who are issuing shares. The laws opened up even further. With Reg CF, Regulation A+, that means we could target retail investors up to $5 million rounds on Reg CF, up to $75 million rounds for Regulation A+. To date, have worked on over 500 of these. They've collectively raised, produced over nine figures of capital, and we're one of the top, if not the top agencies in the world for investor acquisition.
Okay, so just to explain that for the listening audience, basically what I'm hearing you say is that there are restrictions on marketing to people to raise money. So you mm-hmm. had to get licensed to do that. You did, and now you help people who are trying to raise money for a brand, a product, a business of some sort, to find those investments. Is that basically what you're saying in a nutshell?
Yes, except we didn't get licensed. We would have had to if we were a portal, a FINRA regulated portal. Mm-hmm. The rules are with the SEC. So you file a Form C, a Form 1A, a Form D, depending on the type of raise you're conducting. And then you work with either a broker dealer or a portal. Portal is a marketplace where a number of these investments appear and they ensure compliance. We're just on the marketing side. So we're not advising on the legal or the accounting, but we're bringing investors to that deal. In many cases, building the offering page, the pitch video. So the issuers are following these rules. We're marketing, also staying compliant with the messaging, of course, and measuring return on ad spend, measuring marketing efficiency ratio around what's raised.
So when you decided to kind of go into that, like you unpacked your story very broadly, but I'm just trying to like draw it out for the listening audience. You started out helping anybody and everybody, just about, and you sort of kind of leaned into a specific vertical that was working that you liked. You mentioned that it was something that attracted you to helping startups and raising capital. Yep. How did you make that shift from like, okay, it's time to start saying no to some things and say yes to more of this. Like, what was that like for you? Like, in your mind, what was your process?
Well, competition in one aspect. We were one of 1,000 marketing agencies, you know, probably in Los Angeles, let alone California or the U.S. If we were going after anything and everything, we were going up against anyone and everyone who was a marketing agency. So I realized it was important to have a specialization. What that vertical, what that industry was going to be was a question mark, and we were trying out different things. And what really resonated with me was capital raising being a real need, a real demand of our clientele. They were always asking us questions that pertain to what they were speaking to investors about.
Mm-hmm.
Can you work on the business section, the marketing section of our business plan? Can you put together a pitch deck for us? This first campaign, I want to present the results to an investor. Can you actually be part of that meeting with the investor? So once I learned about Regulation D, allowing for solicitation of accredited investors, and then once the laws opened up further, the light bulb went off of, hey, a lot of companies fail because they're undercapitalized. I can be of real value to these companies, to these issuers here. And we've seen success. We've built a formula. It's working. Let's do more of this.
Mm-hmm.
And let's start to position ourselves as an equity crowdfunding agency, an investor marketing agency. And that just led to more partnerships, more intros, more positioning that had the top issuers reaching out to us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very cool. So what was going on for you in your business when you made that shift? Did you have to like overhaul your whole website? Did you have to change up? Did you have to let some customers go? Like what was, we all know that change doesn't come smoothly. Let's be like, there's sure. always something.
Yeah. Yeah. So with digital products, used to joke around in the ad tech space, it's just a one sheet and an SOP, standard operating procedure. We definitely had to make changes to the website. At first, it was being broad enough to where it was investor and user acquisition. Later, really, tuning into that messaging of investor acquisition. Had to really make sure the team was well educated. They needed to be experts on the space, not just me. And not just around the marketing, they really needed to understand what was happening. Every Monday morning, I do research on the industry and I look at the top campaigns beyond ours, how much money is raised across the entire space. And I put together a report. And part of that is to educate my team. The other part is now we're able to use that report, that one sheet, as part of our client discussions that week.
Mm-hmm.
But bringing the expertise level up, we didn't fire any clients. We just focused our business development efforts towards investor acquisition campaigns. So it happened somewhat naturally from there. There were definitely hurdles, how to tap into different ecosystems within the vertical and build strategic partnerships and really show how we were more effective than other agencies and how this was the right approach, investing into advertising. So eventually built our own educational platforms for external audiences. So I have my podcast, Test Optimize Scale. I put out a weekly episode there, each with a different guest. We do a monthly webinar. I did one in December 2025 of 2025 Wrapped and showed our top 20 campaigns there. We do a monthly, each with a different team member, different deck. We put out an article every 2 weeks. Needed to position ourselves as the thought leaders in the space. And that took a while to really adopt, but has continued to produce for us.
Mm-hmm. So let's unpack this for the audience. So if we're talking about choosing a vertical, this isn't the same. Like, I think there's a lot of buzzwords here that could have some crossover,
Okay.
Niche down, choose your avatar. These are all things I hear that I think are just starting to become a little nebulous, not to mention with the onset of AI and like the mass information overload online everywhere. I'm seeing a shift even more, like where people before were already told to niche down. Now we're like getting hyper niche, right? Which is literally what you did. So your word is vertical, which I think is really awesome because it truly, it's like, it almost, I think of a vortex. Like it, once you land on it, it sucks you up, right? And it's like getting you into that funnel of the thing that's working. But I was taking notes while you were talking, and it sounds like this was sort of your process. First, you established demand. Then you clarified your value. You structured your formula, you focused on your positioning
mm-hmm.
and your partnerships, and then you advertised.
Yes.
Six steps. Okay. Very clear. We're done. We can wrap it. I'm just kidding.
Is that easy? Yes. And it's ongoing. I'm part of the Crowdfund Professional Association, the Global Equity Crowdfunding Alliance. I've been able to really find the right industry connections and serve towards the growth of the space as a whole. That obviously has marketing value and is conveyed to our clients. I've been able to be a part of a lot of the conferences and be featured in different publications and podcasts in this space and on other entrepreneurial platforms where I'm able to share this message, because it is that need. Groups need more capital, but it's ongoing. Have different plans for this year and want to continue to be, you know, at the forefront of investment crowdfunding and other areas of investor acquisition. There's gold. There's Web3, cryptocurrency, there's real estate, there's all these different industries within the vertical that have a constant need to generate more leads, to get more conversions from investors.
Isn't it interesting how it's like we can think we're being hyper-specific, and then after you dig into it, it's like, oh, wait, no, there's even more lanes that you could need. I mean, technically, if you wanted to, you could become like the marketing for people who want to raise just real estate capital or just this capital. I mean, like if you really wanted to get even super, like I find that so interesting. When I started my podcast, it was the Passive Income Examiner originally. And I thought, oh, that is so niche. Like everyone says, you know, get it. Well, then like 6 months later, there's the Passive Income MD and the Passive Income Nurse. And they're just talking to nurses and doctors about the same stuff. I was like, huh. I never knew I could get even more clear. It's so interesting how that can happen. And I think that's why it's such an important topic, because as a business owner, when you first start out, like you did, you want to help everybody and do, you know your skills, you know what you're capable of, you know what you're willing to try that you don't know yet, but you're willing to give it a go anyway. And you just, it's like the messy start. You just get into it. And then you kind of flush the rest out as you go. And you start to see where's the need. I like that your business was driven by the demand. Like that was really, really powerful, because one thing I notice a lot working with entrepreneurs is they lose sight of the demand. They are out of touch with it because they know what they know. You get into the jargon. You get into like the business of what you do. You lose touch with where is your audience at that they haven't. Like, where are they at that you need to get down on their level? You need to see what their demand is. It's probably very different than what you think the demand is. Like, you ever been in that situation where you know what your problem is, but then you get into, you're like, oh, wait, no, actually it was that. You're right. I need that, right? That paradigm shift you get as a marketer. I know you understand that concept.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that's really what's so powerful here is your whole business was structured around ultimately really chasing after what people needed, and you have sniffed that out really well. People struggle with that.
Yeah, and our focus goes to the marketing, and there's repetition there. If we don't take a pause and look at what our target audience really needs at that time, and I could tell you it's different here in 2026 than it was in 2023 or 2020 or before that. We could just keep doing the same thing out of habit and not really have a connection to what our audience, our clientele is thinking. I mean, sure, they'll, you know, communicate with us on our weekly reporting calls or our daily, you know, Slack messages, emails, text calls, but really try to understand what's going on in their mind, because the world is changing, that their inherent industry is changing, what their competitors are doing and the marketing channels they're leveraging is always going to fluctuate. So I love how you pointed it out that way. Like we really had to put ourselves in their shoes and determine what is of the most value to them. We do have a weekly whiteboard as well, and for four different departments. And we take a pause for an hour and ask ourselves, what's working? What's not working? What can we build off of? What do we need to improve? What does our audience want to see us improve? Without that, we could just stay busy, heads down, keep doing the same thing, but it would definitely show up in terms of our growth, as well as client satisfaction.
Do you have a way of like staying in tune with what your clients' needs are or your prospects' needs? Because that's a whole nother like layer. But do you have a process for that?
There's a few things that we do. One of them, you know, goes back to that weekly research I do on Monday mornings, where we'll then go a step further and audit one of the top issuers, someone we're not working with, and really trying to understand how are they raising capital? What advertising are they running? What marketing channels are driving traffic to their offering page? What types of content are getting out? Are they getting out? What days and times of week are they getting the most engagement? What types of headlines are they getting the most response from? Who's talking about them in the media? Who's talking about them on social media pages? So we're not caught with blinders. Mm-hmm. We're not just doing what's worked before us in the past. We're trying to really advise based on what we're seeing in the market to our mm-hmm. clients. So we can say, hey, there's a few email newsletters we haven't tested out yet, financial email newsletters that go out to investors. If you'd like, we can reach out to them. They may have a paid program, but we've been able to identify many of those just by tracking what other issuers in the space are doing. Client satisfaction calls as well too. And instead of sending a form, like to ask them what they're getting out of the experience, what more they would like to see. You know, we have the deliverables, we have client satisfaction and performance in that order, and need to make sure we're checking the boxes at each stage. So closed loop, getting feedback from the clients directly. Sometimes I hear it from the partners as well, strategic partners, groups that refer over founders, CEOs to us. And, you know, what type of feedback have they heard, not just from clients, but from prospects? What can I change up about the process? That's all on top of competitor marketing audits for other agencies, where we want to, you know, follow them, see what they're sending in their email newsletters, what they're posting on social, a lot of case studies in there, you know, pulls the curtain behind the channels that they're using, as well as their sales process. I'll get sent over proposals from them at times too. I usually reach out and look to build a partnership, a relationship of some sorts. I see them at conferences and my panels, but if I have an understanding of what they're offering, it helps me shape what we need to do.
That's great. I mean, I think when I'm, for people in any industry, essentially, if we were to summarize that, that would be like funnel hacking, researching, you know, getting into somebody's ecosphere, following them on social media, looking at their website, looking up them, seeing what ads are running on Facebook. If any, you know, I'm sure you have some pretty stealth tools at your fingertips as an ad agency, but, you know, for the average person, there's still ways that they can do recon, I guess you'd say. But you know, one of the pieces that you mentioned that I think is one of like a scary step for people is that collaboration with your competition, right? Your quote competition. I think that's a piece that a lot of people overlook. And I'm really seeing a trend right now, personally, in the AI industry. Like we're talking about like vibe coders, right? This is a very nuanced thing that's just coming up. But these guys, what they're doing is they are teaming up on Facebook, on mostly Facebook is where I see it. I don't know about YouTube, but and they're like sharing each other's stuff, growing, helping each other, becoming affiliates for each other's things. And they're bouncing ideas off of each other and they're all making money on the way up. Like there's really no reason why we can't, just because you do advertising to, you know, help somebody with generating money for a specific problem, your competitor might have a more niche thing and you might have a client that comes along that they're actually a better fit for. And if you guys trade it, make money on the way up, refer each other's business. Like there's so much potential there. What is that like for, like, how did you reach out? Just if you have any tips for people who are listening that might feel nervous about that, like how do you forge that relationship?
Sure. It's easiest in person, which isn't an accident. You're going to an event, you're seeing your competitors are going to be there, and you figure out what you want to approach them with. For me, it's really the same as any strategic partnership. Some strategic partners, I've built relationships with a simple LinkedIn message, telling them what we do, talking about what they do, mentioning, you know, I see an opportunity, would love to explore collaboration, and getting on a call from there. I like to think of strategic partnerships as a blank canvas that we're both painting. So I don't go in and say, hey, this is exactly how we work with other groups and, you know, this is what we could do with you, as much as referencing that here's some things we've done with other groups and here's some different ways we've worked with other agencies. I've been on panels with many of the other agency founders over time, and I look for some different low-hanging fruit. So I have a podcast. I can bring that up and invite them to an episode. So I would love to see if there's any ways to collaborate, in fact, or even around content. In fact, I have a podcast. Would love to have you on as a guest. pretty easy yes for most of them. Some of them have reservations, you know, hey, you're a competitor, I'm not sure. And then I have to explain to them my philosophy around that, which is I believe in a rising tide lifting all ships, similar to the picture you're painting there, Lindsay. And particularly for my space, what's good for one of the agencies is really good for everybody. If another agency in the space has a landmark campaign and it gets earned media, it's in the spotlight, maybe mainstream groups talking about it, that's good for the entire space. Same for our campaigns. There's different ways we could share notes. We could build cross referral systems. Maybe I can take on a client, but they're a good fit for somebody else or vice versa. I offer to give them a call if their clients ever call me. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good thing to do.
That's very good.
And, you know, have a discussion around it. I'd like to think they do the same. Some of them do, some of them don't. And that's okay. There's going to be some groups that are more competitive with us, others that believe in this, you know, industry alliance, if you will. But if we're able to put together a joint webinar, if we, you know, are both promoting a panel that we're going to be on, if we're doing different things across the board that are good for the space, I see many benefits out of it. And I've seen it, you know, actualizing referrals and actual revenue.
I believe it. You know, I remember, you just reminded me, when I was working at Toyota years ago, and I was working in the service center, and Toyota would kind of control the marketing. So they would send out like a thing to all the Toyota owners in the Valley. This was in Phoenix. And all of the dealership service directors would get together and decide on what the coupons were going to be. And some of, and the rule, there was this like unwritten rule where you weren't allowed to undercut somebody else's pricing. Because let's be real, I mean, we could chase them down to the bottom dollar for an oil change. But then you're just going to get that one guy that goes to whoever's got the cheapest oil change and never buys anything else, right? And what they really realized was that the competition wasn't against each other. It was dealerships versus independent shops. And for people who might not even know that your type of company exists, it helps if you guys are all beating the same drum to draw in more people who need these services. I mean, there's plenty to go around. You guys very much have a niche situation where there may not be that many choices to choose from anyway. I'm not even sure. Well, then that leads me to really my last question is, what type of companies specifically do you work with, so that if somebody's listening and they have a good referral or recommendation for you, they're going to be the people that reach out?
Sure. Sure. I mean, it is really a full spectrum of different industries. By the way, with the competitors, I believe speaking about them positively makes you look better as well too. Or if you're just trying to pick apart what they're doing, it says something to who you're speaking about, who you're speaking to, often in a negative light. In terms of industries, as I mentioned across the board, I mentioned gold, real estate, cryptocurrency, AI, commonly what I read about in, you know, Entrepreneur, Forbes or Inc., any business publication ends up coming across our desk. So any growth industry, we've worked with entertainment projects, restaurants, tunnel boring companies, health tech, a lot of med tech and biotech. I found VC channels, angel investors have really slowed down in that category, and more of those groups are going to the crowd. They're going to digital channels as a whole. Travel, I mean, really, you know, you name it, we've probably worked with a group in that space. Some of them are more nuanced, mobile apps and hardware devices where users can earn actual funds from their mobile usage and think how much time you spend on these devices. Agriculture, robotics, hydraulics, robotics, across the board.
That's awesome. What's the best place for people to connect with you?
LinkedIn, Jason Fishman, Marina Del Rey, DNA, you can find me on LinkedIn. You can also reach out to us through our website, digitalnicheagency.com. Highlight our YouTube channel as well, too, at Digital Niche Agency. Have my podcast, the webinars, guest appearances, a lot of you know, in-person conferences, the panels and keynotes are featured there.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining the show. That was a lot of really good value.
A lot of fun, Lindsay. Thanks for inviting me. This has been great.